This is Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan. In that last story, we heard of people getting arrested or harassed by the police, possibly because of the color of their skin. But this happens even without racial profiling. Sometimes a person ends up in prison, even for years, because of what's called a wrongful conviction. The Northern California Innocence Project has helped to exonerate at least 13 people. The average amount of time an exonerated prisoner has spent behind bars is more than 13 years. Mistaken identities, mishandled evidence, and misconduct are a few ways wrongful convictions happen. Every system has flaws, but the stakes are especially high in criminal justice. An error can mean the difference between sending a guilty or innocent person to prison. San Francisco resident Maurice Caldwell was a low-level drug dealer living in Bernal Heights when he found out just how devastating a relatively simple blunder can be. KALW's Julia Lundberg has the story.
Let's go back in time about 20 years. It's the early 90s. Young people are watching MTV, their parents' Twin Peaks. Maurice Caldwell is 22 years old and lives in the Almany Projects in Bernal Heights, on the same street where he grew up. He works in an industrial warehouse in Hayward and likes to hang out with his friends.
We went places, did things, go to the movies, go horseback riding, go fishing, go bowling, play ball.
But Caldwell is the first to say he was a troublemaker.
I wasn't a choir boy. I wasn't, you know, no angel. I sold drugs, you know. I did that, you know, time to time.
And from time to time, he'd come in contact with police.
I used to get arrested like two or three times a month, you know. So it was nothing new to me, you know, because I was like, there's nothing, you know. They just want to, you know, question me and let me go.
Until in the morning hours, one day in September of 1990, when Caldwell was picked up and taken to the county jail at 850 Bryant Street. That day, police accused him of murder.
It was a shock. It was a complete shock. I felt like, oh, y'all tripping. Y'all are making a mistake. You know what I'm saying? You really don't know your job if you're trying to accuse me of murder. You're not doing your job.
What did they say?
This is what they said. You had a right to remain silent. You was under arrest. That's what they say.
On June 30 of 1990, on the 900 block of Ellsworth Street in the Almany Projects, a man named Judy Acosta was murdered outside a car. Police found one woman who witnessed the killing as she stood at her apartment window. When police first questioned her, she told them that the shooters do not live around here, and she didn't know their nicknames. 2 weeks later, police returned with a picture of the woman's neighbor, Maurice Caldwell. According to what was later presented at trial, the woman identified Caldwell as the shooter and said she'd seen him standing under a streetlight when Acosta was shot. Whether the streetlight is even visible from the woman's window became a big question, but not until years later. At the trial, no one questioned her testimony, and Caldwell was disappointed with his lawyer.
I had a so-called lawyer, but he was ineffective, totally. He didn't do nothing to, you know, help me fight my case.
The prosecutor, Al Giannini, was an assistant district attorney in San Francisco at the time. He says it's not surprising the witness changed her story, nor did he hide that fact at trial.
I'd like to remind you the jury actually heard those tapes. And I think they accepted the fact that she was saying a couple of different things. I think it's just the sort of apparent inconsistency that happens when people describe things. But if you talk to them a little bit, they clear it up, and it's clear that they mean the same thing.
Giannini believes Mary Cobbs, the witness, was telling the truth.
It is my personal opinion that Mary Cobb was an entirely credible witness, and certainly the jury accepted it, and she was very compelling.
Caldwell's trial for first-degree murder proceeded quickly. What would usually be a year's worth of preparation was condensed into 6 months.
They didn't take their time and do the work that needed to be done, you know, in order to show that it's an innocent man incarcerated. You know, they just wanted to go on my character and look at bad at character, and that's all what was going to lead to the conviction. And that's what happened. When they were saying guilty, I thought they were saying not guilty. You know, I really thought justice prevailed, and then I looked at my lawyer and my family and them, and they were shaking their head like, it didn't dawn on me they were saying guilty.
2 weeks after the trial ended, the 23-year-old Maurice Caldwell was locked up at San Quentin State Prison.
I had 27 years to life. When they say to life, that can mean your entire life. From when they first put the handcuff on me, I was thinking of a way to get up out of this. You know, what can I say? What can I do?
And unlike other inmates who hung out in the yard, made acquaintances, and started to build a life for themselves in prison, Caldwell became a self-styled student of the law.
Because the comfortability in prison, or relaxed in prison, that means, you know, you're doing everything in there. You want to be a part of everything. You know, they got games, sports. You know, they got bingo night. You're a part of all that. They got job, trades. They got work programs. I didn't want none of that. You know, all I wanted to do was deal with the law.
Caldwell wrote letters to attorneys all over the country, always saying the same thing.
I was writing to all these places to get, you know, somebody to hear me, that I'm in prison for a crime I didn't do. And it's going many days, years, you know, but I continue.
And after 17 years in prison, he finally got an answer from Paige Koenig, a lawyer with the California Innocence Project.
I got a box of files on his case in January of 2008.
Koenig went through thousands of pages of trial transcripts and scrutinized all the facts surrounding the one witness who testified.
She went from saying, they don't live around here and I don't know their nicknames, to it's Tuan who lived next door to me. I immediately was like, all right, this is clearly a problem.
So Caleb had a list of dozens of people who had lived in the area and might have seen something. She searched for them one by one and eventually found one person who had been out there that night almost 20 years earlier and who could help her find two other witnesses.
For both of them, it was the first time they'd ever seen anyone shot and killed, so this stood out as something in their minds, and both of them told us who the two real shooters were.
Caleb says, unlike the police, she was careful about influencing the witnesses' memories.
I interviewed them separately. They hadn't spoken to each other. None of them have spoken to Maurice or the guy who confessed, who's now in prison for another murder. I kept thinking that at some point someone was going to care about who really did this, you know, who really killed this guy. And it was just like they didn't care at all.
The whole process of overturning Caldwell's conviction took more than 3 years.
And Maurice's mom was sick during a lot of this time. And he was really, really patient throughout everything. But he would tell me sometimes, you know, I'd just like to be able to get out in time to take care of my mom.
While Caldwell's mother got sicker and sicker, the legal system sputtered and stalled.
And she died during the year of delays of the DA's office.
Caldwell did get out. A judge found that Caldwell's defense attorney had been incompetent and overturned his conviction. While Caldwell and Caleb believe justice has been served, Giannini's disappointed with the outcome.
These things, they happen. It's unfortunate that you can have a case that goes all the way through the system, and the police did nothing wrong, the prosecution did nothing wrong, the jurors did nothing wrong, and the witnesses all told the truth. And yet, because of something that has, you know, nothing to do with guilt or innocence, a murder conviction is overturned years and years after the fact when it can't be retried. It's just something that happens. We all have to live with it.
On March 28, 2011, Caldwell walked out of custody and met up with his sister and his lawyers. His first destination, McDonald's. On a cold November day, we're parked in Maurice Caldwell's blue Corolla. Now he lives in the East Bay and hardly ever comes back to San Francisco since he got out of prison nearly a year ago.
March 28, 2011. Yep, that's my day. Me walking out of 850 Bryant with my jail paperwork and some county clothes that they gave me with a big old smile on my face. That's what that is.
How would you like it to have been?
Most of all, me hugging my mom and my grandmother. That's the most thing I would have wanted out of anything in life, to be able to hug my mother and my grandmother and tell her I told you. For them to be able to see me come home now and know that everything I was telling them, That would mean more to me than anything, you know, and I don't got that.
Caldwell is not a rarity. He's just one of hundreds of former inmates whose conviction have been overturned after spending years in prison. He's hoping to sue the state and get compensation for the time he served. In San Francisco, I'm Julia Lundberg for Cross Currents.